So I want to once again look at a bit more the story of these two sons and this loving, compassionate father. But this time, I want us to think about and consider specifically what this might tell us about Jesus and our relationship with him. And really, also how that, understanding our relationship with God the Father, with Jesus, how that leads us to be able to come before God more honestly, more openly, with confession of our sin and praise for him. Let me read the context that Jesus is speaking into, just so we're reminded of the context, and then I'll skip down to back up in verse 17 to the end. Again, this is Luke 15, verse 1. Now the tax collectors and sinners were drawing near to him, and the Pharisees and the scribes grumbled, saying, "This man receives sinners and eats with them." Then he told them this parable. I'll skip down to verse 17. But when he came to himself, he said, "How many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread, but I perish here with hunger? I will rise and go to my father, and I will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants.' And he rose and came to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion and ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Bring quickly this best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring the fattened calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate. Now the older son was in the field, and as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, 'Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has received him back safe and sound.' But he was angry and refused to go in. His father came out and entreated him. But he answered his father, 'Look, these many years I have served you, and I have never disobeyed your commandment. Yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. But when the son of yours came, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fattened calf for him.' And he said to him, 'Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. It was fitting to celebrate and be glad. For this brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found.'" This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Well, when I first became a Christian, I remember really being drawn to the person of Christ, and especially intrigued by the crucifixion. I began reading about Jesus' life and death, and remember asking myself, why would this kind of death happen to this man who had been doing so many amazing things, healing people, caring for people, speaking grace into people's lives, and he dies in this gruesome crucifixion? I remember really being struck by that. I hadn't, up until that point, I had not considered the life of Jesus very much. I didn't know about his life. And so the crucifixion was kind of shocking to me in a way. But my first being drawn to reading about Jesus and then to this major event of the Bible has a backstory. It was the 20th of September in 1987. And I remember the date clearly because it was my dad's birthday, my father's birthday. And my relationship with my father was a little difficult at this time when I was a teenager. We had a bit of a rough relationship. We argued a lot, including arguments about what I wanted to do with my life and how I wanted to live my life. And it was different for what he had in mind for my life. I was very into trying to find my identity in being amongst my friends. I wanted to be gone all the time, out with my friends, partying, not coming home at night. I didn't want what my father wanted for me. And I wanted what I myself wanted. And I was going to try to find a way somehow to make myself happy. And I was trying to do this living my own way, however I wanted. It all came to a head on my dad's birthday. We had gotten into this huge argument because my family wanted me there that night and I had somewhere else to be. I was so upset that I remember running off, trying to get by myself and be alone. I was mad, alone. I was frustrated, mad at the world. However, that night was really the first time that I specifically remember coming to myself, like the younger son, in a sense, and realizing, what am I doing with my life? I'm making a mess of it. I'm not happy. I'm not fulfilled at all. I'm wrecking relationships with my family. But that night, I also remember the times that my brother had loved me. He had stood up for me in certain situations and who also graciously shared the good news about Jesus with me. So I decided that night to pick up my Bible that I had never read beyond the first couple verses in the beginning book of the Bible in Genesis. And I realized what I was reading about was really making sense of myself and my life. I was someone running from God, just as I had been running from my father, breaking off relationship. I was lost and in need of being found. I knew then why it was that Jesus went to the cross to die for the sins, and not just the sins of the world, but for my sins. At the center of the Christianity is the life and the work, the good news of his coming into the world to go to the cross and to pay for the sins of the world. So where might this parable be pointing us to what Jesus came to do and what that means for our lives and how that leads to confession and praise? To really see this from the text, we need some more context, particularly where is this parable placed in Luke's gospel, and how does that point us to the good news of Jesus? Well, where in the Bible is the story situated? It comes after two other parables about lostness. The parable of the lost sheep, about a shepherd who is shepherding 100 sheep, and one goes off, and he leaves the 99 to go after the one that was lost. The second one is about a woman who lost a coin, and she turns a house upside down looking for the coin until she finds it. And when she finds it, she rejoices. She celebrates. It is after these two stories that Jesus tells this one about the two sons. So what might be different about the parable than the previous two parables? In the first two, we have two people who have gone after something that was lost. But in this parable, who goes after the lost younger brother? In that culture, that time, it would have been no doubt who was to go after the younger brother and bring him home. It was the role of the older brother. The story of these two brothers reminds me of back in the beginning chapters of Genesis, in chapter 4 of Genesis. This is after God had created the world. He had made it good. Sin had entered into the world as an intruder into God's good creation. It had caused all kinds of problems. It had caused relational problems, alienation from God, alienation from one another. And we see this very clearly in the story in Genesis 4 of two brothers, Cain and Abel. Right after this incident, we are told, so the story of Cain is one in which Cain kills his brother, Abel. And right after this horrible incident, we are told that God had asked Cain a question. And this is very important to understanding what we're talking about and seeing Jesus in this parable. God asked Cain, "Where is Abel, your brother?" And Cain's response is, "I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper? Should I be watching out for him?" Again, in that culture, it was the role of the older brother to keep the younger brother. And where is the older brother in the story of the two sons that we've been reading about? Well, we know that he does not go looking for his younger brother. And furthermore, even after the younger brother returns home and the party's happening and he's enjoying the party, the reality is that the younger brother refuses to go in. The older brother refuses to go in. He stands outside of the party. And it is here that Jesus actually, in a sense, abruptly stops this parable. He leaves it open-ended. We're left wondering, did the brother ever come into the party? Did he take that invitation and come in? It leaves us with this question. So 2,000 years later, we are given this story. We have this story before us, which ought to raise questions for us. Who will find us when we go astray? Listen, the whole thrust of the Bible, again, is that God the Father did send an elder brother who came after us to rescue us. Jesus came into the world to save sinners. Do you know, again, that there is no depth of sin in which God cannot find you? Do you know that whatever shame you're carrying for whatever you've done, it's not beyond God's love for you? Now, maybe, again, we can relate with the one or the other. We can relate with the younger brother. We know this great need, but maybe you're the older brother, one that has characteristics of the scribes and Pharisees. Maybe you're standing outside the party. Maybe you're standing outside of the party of salvation, that you're still in the midst of trying to understand who it is that Jesus is, who it is that he is, what he's done. Or at least, at some level, we're standing outside of the party. Again, do you know that either one is just as far off from the Father? Maybe you are resentful about something, full of envy. Maybe you think Christianity is just simply a set of rules, moral rules to live by. Maybe you think it's a set of rules to live by in order to be accepted by God, meeting this standard. This is the default of our heart. The default position is to try to earn our own acceptance before one another. And I struggle with that. Definitely struggle with trying to be accepted by others, people-pleasing, that sort of thing. But are we doing that with God as well? He's already welcomed you. He's already loved you. He already invites you in. Do you know that he comes after you through Jesus to bring you into the party, not because of what you've done, but because he loves you? So whether and embracing this really does change how we live. This is why it's so important. We've been going over this, and we're going over it twice, is to remember the good news of Jesus. It's a practice that we need to be we need to practice remembering. So how does it change us? How is it changing you? In this story, the son returns, is embraced by the loving arms of the father, and then he confesses his sin. Look at verse 21. Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. But the father, of course, again, has already been planning to join the celebration. So a question I have for us is, are we responding to God with confession and celebration in our lives? When we know the depth of our own sin, and that can be hard, when we know it, right? When we see our sin, when we constantly repeat a sin, when we know the depth of our sin, that nothing besides God will satisfy, and the amazing love of God, when we know he responds to us as a loving father, our response can be one of confession and freedom. Free to confess and go before him honestly. We don't need to be afraid. We can come with whoever we are, and we can come and confess to him and celebrate. I mean, one of the things I think you do often hear in Emmanuel is confess your sin and then hear the words of assurance that you're forgiven of your sin. And it's freeing to remind ourselves that we are forgiven of our sin. This is where knowing God's love, his mercy, leads. Fleming Rutledge, in her remarkable book, Crucifixion. She says this about the depths of our sin, our lostness. Once we come to know God in Jesus Christ, we can no longer imagine the Father's joyful banquet continuing into all eternity with the elder brother standing outside looking in, imprisoned forever in his envy and resentment. She goes on to say, we cannot talk about sin for very long without being drawn into doxology. Doxology is a word that means praise or glory. She says, were it not for the mercy of God surrounding us, we would have no perspective from which to view sin, for we would be entirely subject to it. This is the reason for affirming that wherever sin is unmasked and confessed, God's redemptive power is already present and acting. I knew that God, that the night that I was had my dad's birthday, I knew I had come to myself and I knew that God's redemptive work was already present and acting, even though I had been so far off from him. How should we respond to the mercy of God? Look back into the story. Even though no one goes after the younger son, we see that in a sense, God did find him, the younger son. And where did he find him? He found him in the pigsty. It was when he was in the depths of the pigsty that the parable says he came to himself. His sin was unmasked. And then he would confess. This is the difference. The younger son understood what it meant to be a miserable offender, to be in despair, to be guilty, to be lost. But he knew what it meant to be saved by grace. It's a terrible thing to be alienated from God, to be left. But praise God, he comes after us by sending us an elder brother to keep us, his own son Jesus. Have you come to yourself knowing the depth of that sin and come to God in confession? We can freely go to him. Do you know the deep love of God in sending Jesus? And are you coming to him with praise? After coming to realize the depths of his sin, the younger son goes home. And he is not saved by his words, but by grace, love, and the sacrifice of the Father. In other words, the son doesn't try to come up with excuses. He doesn't can't talk his way in to one who already accepts him. Can't talk his way into being accepted by the one who already accepts him. He doesn't have to. Father welcomes him with great love. The Father lavishes his love on us. So there are two ways, again, here, that we are alienated from God. One, and maybe it's, again, you're running from God. You want to be in charge of your life. And you're now in the pigsty. You're found yourself in a mess. For me, again, it goes back to my dad's birthday when I came to myself, realizing because of my sin, I had messed up my life, and my brother came to me, my elder brother, came to me with the gospel of my true elder brother, Jesus. But to truly thrive, must continue to look back to Jesus. Remember, why does he come? He's come to reconcile sinners to himself. But maybe we are, like the older, hiding behind our own self-righteousness or thinking that we have earned our right into the party. Do you know that to get in the party doesn't come by merit? It comes by Jesus. Gracious offer that comes by his death and his resurrection. And this is good news. This is what leads us to be able to come then before him and confess honestly, openly. This is what we need to remind ourselves. And it's what leads us to praise. I love the Magnificat, Mary's song, because it's as though when she knows of Jesus and his coming birth, she burst out with song in praise, overwhelmed that God would choose someone like her. It's a beautiful thing. The cross of Jesus is sufficient for those who are far off and for those who are seemingly near. When we deeply embrace this truth, we are led to confession and doxology, to freely praising in our words and in our actions. And we can truly live knowing we are home. We are home with God, our true home in relationship to him. Let me pray. And then, I wanted to save time if there's any questions about anything that's arisen from this or that's stirring in your heart, or maybe just questions that you're curious about. Let me pray, though, and give God thanks again. God, we thank you that, God, that we can come to you freely because you love us this much that we've been reading about, that we don't have to try to come up with excuses about our sin. We can just give it to you. We can just confess it. You lavish us with your love. And that changes us. When we know we are accepted by you, it changes us. So I pray that we would know that deeper and deeper, be led out to live for you, to give you glory, to praise you all of our days. Pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
We'll maybe sing first, Mark, 3 there.